Hi, this is Barry Liss at INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science is Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Whether we take a trip on the highway or the virtual superhighway that we call the Internet, we're all caught up in a network. Designing networks correctly makes a difference in a society as complex as our own. In today's segment, we speak with Professor Anna Nagurny, Director of the Virtual Center for Supernetworks at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you very much, Barry. It's my pleasure to be here.
For starters, let's look at my hometown of New York City. When I heard that the city was turning Times Square, which is right in the center of Manhattan, into a mall, I kind of cringed. And yet this seems to have been a success. What happened?
Indeed, it has been a success, and it's actually not the first time that it was done. It was done in 1989, actually, when Times Square was also closed in honor of Earth Day, and it was observed that traffic actually improved. This time, however, the mayor and also the transportation authorities decided to do something on a grander scale, and rather than just closing Times Square, they decided to close from 47th Street all the way to 42nd Street and also parts of Herald Square. It has been a fantastic success. I was down there in New York City examining actually what's happening and the reactions of the people. That included the taxi drivers and even the pedestrians in honor of World Science Festival. And I didn't hear a single complaint. So it's a terrific initiative, very, very brave, a little bit anarchic, but exciting, and it's working.
A topic you've written about in connection with Times Square is something called the Bray's paradox. I'll let you pronounce it, but tell us a little bit about what it is.
In fact, what's happening now in New York City and also in other parts of the world, for example, in Seoul, Korea, and even earlier in Stuttgart, Germany, is an example of what we're calling the reverse of the Bray's paradox. It was a paradox that was developed in a paper in 1968 by a professor, Dietrich Bryce, who's a professor of numerical analysis, also actually a little bit related to operations research. And in the paper, it was actually written in German, and we recently translated it, and it was published, the translation was published in an INFORMS journal, Transportation Science, in 2005. What he discovered is, depending upon how travelers behave in a network, or you can think of it more generally, users of a network, and it could be obviously a transportation network, but doesn't have to be limited to transportation network, you will get different kinds of flows, different kind of behavior, and in the case of selfish behavior, you can actually have travel time increasing for all users if you add a road, which is extremely counterintuitive. For years, planners and network designers were assuming that if you add a link, you add a road to a transportation network, that the travel time will improve for everyone. But that was found not to be the case because users, drivers, behave individually. They behave selfishly. Each one tries to determine his own best route of travel. But depending upon the route of travel from an origin to destination that a driver chooses, you get negative externalities. And we're really in a world of congestion. And what has been observed then, if you add a certain link, the travel time can increase for everyone. And interestingly enough, the kind of network topology that we have in like central Manhattan is almost exactly the Bryce paradox kind of network. So here, what has happened is the reverse. Rather than adding a link and travel time increases for everyone, actually a link has been removed. A road has been removed to drivers, and essentially the travel time has improved.
Which is definitely counterintuitive, and Broadway in New York goes straight through the heart of Manhattan,
exactly.
And one would have thought that it was essential.
So actually we're calling it Bryce on Broadway.
Ah, very clever. And what does this success tell us about planning traffic and transportation networks in general?
It says that we have to use really the latest analytics, and we have to capture not only the topology of the network, how nodes are connected to links, but we also have to capture the behavior of users in the network. Can we control the flows from origins to destinations, or are kind of the users of the networks acting independently and selfishly? Because then we get totally different flows, we get totally different costs, and very, very different solutions. Unless you have highly symmetric and very boring networks, but that's not the world we live in today.
And how long have researchers been looking at the selfish side, the fact that individuals act in their own interest?
Actually, this is fascinating, and I think that's one of the greatest contributions of operations research. A lot of times we're way ahead of our times. For example, in the book Beckman, McGuire, and Winston, published in 1956, and we had a special anniversary actually at the Informs meeting in San Francisco to honor actually the authors of this book, it was observed that selfish behavior is different from unselfish behavior on transportation networks. And in fact, if we go even further back, in 1920, Pigou wrote a book, Welfare of Nations, in which he examined a very simple transportation network and noticed that if you could route traffic so that you minimize total costs in the network, you will get different flows than if people choose their optimal routes individually.
You spoke at the World Science Festival in New York City this year, 2009. The question posed was, can marching ants, schooling fish, and herding wildebeest teach us something about the morning commute? Did you have to answer that one, or did you leave it to the biologists on the same panel with you?
It was very, very provocative question posed to us by Robert Krulwich of NPR, but it was also fascinating to think about it. For example, if you look at human behavior, it tends to be very, very different for the most part when it comes to biological systems. There you have what is known as swarming behavior. You have animals cooperating more closely together. And when you think about drivers, in a way, we do see platoons forming on transportation networks. But for the most part, people act selfishly, they act individually, if we're talking about congested urban transportation networks. However, if we're talking about freight networks, you can have some sort of central control. And there you can minimize, for example, total cost to society and still make sure that those shipments arrive where they're supposed to arrive.
So that's a contrast between the paradigm of biology or animals and something very different.
However, we have just found out that our work in actually network equilibrium and transportation is being used by the ecology community and the biology community in terms of food webs, which I find absolutely fascinating.
What are food
similar
webs?
Kinds of for example, our work is being applied now to fisheries from around the world, where you have small fish, such as anchovies, being eaten by bigger fish and so forth. And they find that these food webs behave exactly like supply chains or network equilibrium. And they're using precisely our work to try and determine what are going to be the biomasses of different kinds of species and different kinds of population, and also even investigating climate change in such settings, which I think this is another example of operations research and research in networks by the OR community going to entirely different discipline, and even now being applied in ecology and biology, which I think is just absolutely thrilling.
In a recent article that you wrote, you looked at the economic stimulus package of the Obama administration, and to quote, during the next several years, towns, cities, states, the nation, the private sector will be making decisions on potentially huge investments toward the repair, rebuilding, and renewal of our roads, bridges, electric power lines, telecommunication networks. Why is it so important to prioritize these projects?
Even though there might be billions allocated, supposedly in the stimulus package, obviously when the funds ultimately trickle down to the various constituencies on the regional level, the town level, there isn't as much money available. So planners have to be very, very careful so they don't make the kinds of mistakes that have made over the years. You have to be careful which bridges and roads you repair. You also have to be careful how you add the new roads, how you add the new bridges, because you have to factor in how the users will be using these kinds of actually network infrastructures.
And you're right that the first thing that has to be done is obvious, that you have to repair things that are severely damaged and that affect public safety. what kind of projects should be examined for the next tier of work?
You need to determine, for example, which are the most important links in these transportation networks. And we don't have to limit ourselves to just transportation networks. Obviously, electric power supply chains are extremely important, and even enhancing the internet in different kinds of communities, including the rural communities. We have to identify which nodes really matter, which links really matter, so that if they're either fully disrupted, for example, if they're fully destroyed, they'll make the biggest impact on the economy.
For instance, if a bridge collapses in Minnesota, as happened in 2008, I think.
Exactly, and I was there to speak, actually, in the civil engineering department shortly thereafter, and I got to see the site. It was horrible, absolutely horrible, 13 lives lost. And so much of our infrastructure in the U.S., it's crumbling, and it shouldn't be happening in the richest country in the world. We need to reinforce our infrastructure and to do it in an intelligent way.
You pose a hypothetical problem about having to choose which of two bridges to repair, given that both are in need. How do you approach a problem like that?
Well, we've developed a new measure, actually, with a former doctoral student of mine, Patrick Chung, which helps decision makers and planners identify which are the most important nodes and links in transportation networks as well as in other kinds of network systems. So you can essentially rank them in terms of their economic importance. And this is a well-defined measure. It's being used not only in the U.S., but it's even being used now internationally, including in Germany, to identify which are the most important highway systems. Because their destruction will have the greatest impact. Okay, and you can rank them, which is extremely, extremely important and very, very valuable.
You present a warning about bad planning. It's a slightly long quote, but I think it's important to read. Our roads and bridges, electric power and telecommunications networks, schools, hospitals, manufacturing plants, and even financial networks have suffered from years of neglect. The exposure now to increased vulnerability due to this deterioration and lack of investment is providing us with new opportunities and possibilities for synergies. However, without well-thought-out planning and methodological assessments, we may end up with roads that increase travel time for all, environmental fixes that actually increase pollution, and new telecommunication networks that slow down the flow of information in the internet. So that brings to mind, what are the dangers kind of lurking around the corner?
We have to realize that we don't live in a centralized kind of economy. Okay, we have decentralized decision making. People act individually. They compete. Sometimes they might cooperate. And by ignoring the kind of interaction of humans with our technologies and with our networks, you can make very, very bad decisions. And these are decisions that will last for a long time. When you build certain roads, you expect the roads to last for a long time. So you have to be very careful how you allocate your resources, because we do live in a world of limited resources. And that's what operations researchers do so well. They optimize within limited resources. So it's a fantastic time now for us.
For our general listeners who are interested in science, tell us about the new book you co-authored, Fragile Networks, Identifying Vulnerabilities and Synergies in an Uncertain World.
Thank you. We decided to put our research together, and we've been researching problems of network vulnerability for a good 5 years.
I neglected to mention your co-author's name. Could you mention it?
Sure. My co-author is Dr. Patrick Chung. He's a former doctoral student of mine at the Eisenberg School, University of Massachusetts Amherst. He's now an assistant professor of operations management at Pennsylvania State University, the professional graduate school in the Philly campus. Together, we wrote a stream of papers, and also I did some other papers individually, that helped us to show the commonalities between, say, transportation networks and other kinds of network systems. So by developing different kinds of importance measures and rankings, as well as robustness measures for transportation networks, we were able to transfer those kinds of metrics to different kinds of network domains, including the internet, supply chains, as well as financial networks, which we found to be very, very exciting. In fact, in several publications, we were able to answer questions that were posed over half a century ago. That's 50 years ago. It was postulated that electric power generation distribution networks might work like transportation networks. And we were able to show that that is indeed the case, which is fantastic, because not only are transportation networks congested, but so are electric power generation distribution networks, especially in New England, where I live. Also, we were able to show that the methodologies that we developed for the study of transportation networks could be applied directly to financial networks. And now some of our work is being used to kind of identify which are the most important nodes and links in financial systems world.
We only have a time for a few more questions, but I think it's worth going into some of these specific areas where you're using these tools. And why don't we go through a couple of them one by one? You mentioned financial networks, for example.
Yes, we're extremely excited about working financial networks. It's even been posited now to have something equivalent to the National Transportation Safety Board for our financial system. And I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. Years ago, actually, we had a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Economic Research Service, that essentially mapped out the Federal Reserve accounts as a financial network. And interestingly enough, goes back hundreds of years ago that the circular flow of money in an economy can be represented as nodes and links. But we were really the first ones to really exploit kind of financial systems through their network structure. And now we're hearing even Geithner and others are saying this is what we should have done, because we see the interlinkages, you see the connections and so forth. But what we'd like to see the National Science Foundation doing and maybe other government agencies is providing more of the researchers with the data, the financial transaction data, because we have the tools and so forth, and then we can apply the tools to identify who is linked to whom, you know, what exactly happened, and now we're doing a lot of the work theoretically.
And I understand that your research is also used in national security?
Yes, exactly. And in fact, at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, we're starting a new center, and we have a big new thrust on cybersecurity. Because obviously if I work on super networks, I'm very interested in the relationships among different kinds of network systems, and the internet is underlying so many of the network systems now. And with cybersecurity, kinds of flaws and hacking and so on, we need to do something to strengthen, because it's very, very dangerous. We're so reliant on the internet now.
I remember there was kind of a wake-up call in 2008, I think, Russia invaded neighboring Georgia, and they preceded it by attacking the computer system. And I'm sure that people in the United States and throughout the world became extremely alarmed about their own vulnerabilities.
Right, exactly, exactly. So we have even measures to identify the vulnerabilities of different kinds of nodes and links on the internet. And it's a dynamic measure, which is very, very important, because you know the demand varies over time and so forth.
We only have time for one final question, and I guess I would be remiss if I didn't ask you what future research we can expect from you and your center.
I think it's never been more exciting, this period of time in which to research networks. Different disciplines are starting to use networks. We're a very valuable resource through my center, because we put up lots of talks, lots of papers, educational material, tutorials, and so forth. I think some of the very exciting work that we're going to be pursuing, and we've actually started to pursue, is working on smart grids. How can the internet kind of exploit, you know, the new technologies in electric power generation and distribution? Also, we're doing a lot of work on sustainability. We're some of the first to write papers on sustainable supply chains and transportation networks. And also there we're finding different kinds of paradoxes too, which is very, very exciting. Also, we're working on different kinds of network design issues, supply chains for critical needs, which includes pharmaceuticals as well as vaccines and so forth. So I think the theme of doing good with good operations research has always permeated, actually, our center.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Anna Nagurny of the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Professor, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this Science Is Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.